Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. I wanted to give a little bit of an update today. I know we've all seen the arrest affidavit, the probable cause affidavit, but there is a new document that has come out, and it may not have many people would have had access to it, but I hadn't seen it because we had all heard, we had all read, based on some of the Coco TV, another TV station from Oklahoma, put out that Grandma Tiffany Adams had confessed that she was actually the killer of the Kansas moms, of course, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. But even knowing that, right now, we still is not documented anywhere the cause of death. In essence, the rumor is and has been since the beginning that the cause of death was gunshot wounds. However, that hasn't been confirmed. And yet also on the scene, a hammer was discovered outside the car where Veronica's glasses were found. So there's a possibility, a distinct possibility that could be blunt trauma, but that has yet to be reported. So we're going to take a look at the motion to hold defendants without bail. And of course, that would seem like a no-brainer this day and age. You have four individuals for a capital murder, which they are facing the death penalty for. And you can prove, or you have evidence, I'm not saying you could prove yet, but you have evidence of the complicity of all four of them, that there's a conspiracy. And so many things point to the fact that this is a conspiracy. The burner phones, right? The conversations between each other, the stun guns that Tiffany Adams bought, the coordination, the planning, all of that adds to a conspiracy. So what is this, something new? No, it's nothing new, but what we're finding out is, and I've reported it already, that Grandma Tiffany Adams, I understand she hates to be called Grandma, she basically confessed that she was the killer of both Veronica and Jillian Kelly. But to the layman, what does that mean? Well, that means nothing. That means all four of them still conspired, called acting in concert. So you could have just been the getaway car driver. You could have done the littlest thing to accomplish this or facilitate this felony. Look, there's all murder first degree, kidnapping first degree, and conspiracy to commit murder. And you could probably also charge, you know, possession of a deadly weapon, possession of those stun guns, possession of the burner phones and the facilitation of a felony. I don't know if that's specifically a charge, but there could be way more charges here than they're actually mentioning the three specific charges, because those three specific charges tell us a great deal about this case. Those three specific charges: murder first degree, kidnapping first degree, and conspiracy to commit murder. So do you need all those other charges? Probably not, because all four of these individuals can be facing the death penalty with this case. So folks, we're going to go into this. We're going to go into that motion to hold defendants without bail. And we have the paperwork here. We have the actual document that I'm going to show, and I'm going to go over it a little bit, because so much in the probable cause affidavit, the arrest affidavit, told us a lot of the details about this case, but much of it is left out. And some of it now is in this motion to hold defendants without bail document. So hold on to your seats. Get ready. You're entering true crime from a police perspective, and you're entering the off-the-cuff zone. the police off the cuff zone.
There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped in 10th and Grant.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger.
So Coco News put out a report saying that prosecutors say that Tiffany Adams told investigators that she's responsible for the Canvas Moms murders. Let's play this right here.
Did this grandmother admit to killing two women in the Oklahoma Panhandle? New tonight, we're getting a look at what she told investigators. I'm Abigail Ogle.
I'm Jessica Schambach. Prosecutors say Tiffany Adams, the prime suspect in the murders of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, gave a recorded statement after she was arrested. KOCO's Jason Berger got a hold of those documents and is live now. So, Jason, walk us through what you learned.
Yeah, guys, this is a motion to hold Adams without bail, and it says she told investigators she was responsible for the deaths of Veronica and Jillian.
I'm just glad that the people that need to be caught got caught.
Locals from Guymon and surrounding towns showed up to the Texas County Courthouse this week when Tiffany Adams and three other suspects were brought in for their first hearing. That same day, these court documents were filed. Prosecutors stated proof of Adams' guilt is evident, saying, quote, the state would point out that after arrest, this defendant, Tiffany Adams, did provide a recorded statement to law enforcement indicating her responsibility for the death of the deceased.
They've destroyed so many lives.
Not just their own.
Not just their own, but everybody else. They've destroyed the kids. They're without their mothers now. It's sad.
Prosecutors also allege Adams and her co-conspirators weren't afraid to target a judge. The documents say, quote, there are statements of the co-conspirators that their problem would be taken care of because in addition to removing Veronica, they knew the path the judge walked to work. The documents also say there were multiple other attempts to murder Butler in Oklahoma and Kansas.
To support and show up for court hearings and make sure, you know, we're heard and that justice needs to be served.
Now, the documents also say Adams and her boyfriend, Tad Cullum, had a violent history, including, quote, death threats and intimidation against individuals who disagree with their ideas. In Oklahoma City, Jason Berger, KOCO 5.
So there we have it. And I don't know if we had it before specifically where they were all claiming that that grandma confessed. We didn't have the specific documentation. It didn't say it in the arrest affidavit. I'm going to put on the screen the motion to hold defendant without bail. And you can take a look at this. And you can pull this up yourself. So here it is on the screen. The motion to hold defendant without bail. Defendant, Article 2, Section 8 of the Oklahoma Constitution, all persons shall be bailed by sufficient sureties, except that bail may be denied for, right at the top, capital offenses, violent offenses, offenses where the maximum sentence may be life imprisonment or life without parole. So I'm not going to go through all of that, but first degree murder, of course, is a capital offense. And here, a little subdivision A is that the evidence shows that the defendant and co-conspirators engaged in a plot to kidnap and murder the deceased Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly in order to prevent the lawful granting of custody and or unsupervised visitation by the court. The defendant and conspirators attempted said crime previously by both traveling to Yucatan in an attempt to lure Veronica out of her home and additionally planning to organize her death by throwing an anvil through her windshield while she drove down the road. That is baffling to me. I cannot get over that. Like, who would plan to kill someone by throwing an anvil through their windshield? It just doesn't sound even feasible. You know, like, I've never heard in all my years on NYPD or anywhere of someone trying to throw an anvil through someone's windshield to kill them. It doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. The aggravating circumstances of a continuing threat to society can be established through introduction of evidence detailing the defendant's participation in unrelated crimes, as well as the sheer callousness which a defendant commits a particular murder. The nature and circumstances of the killing itself are sufficient to show a propensity towards future acts of violence. The callous manner in which a crime is committed may support a finding of a continuous threat. Both first-degree murder and kidnapping are violent offenses under definition at 57 OS 571. There shall be a rebuttable presumption that no condition of release would assure the safety of the community if the state shows by clear and convincing evidence that the person was arrested. But, oh, this is all legal stuff. The proof of the guilt is evidence. See attached sworn affidavit detailing the relevant facts at this time. State would point out that the arrest, after the arrest, this defendant, Tiffany Adams, did provide a recorded statement to law enforcement indicating her responsibility for the death of the deceased. I'm going to read some of the second paragraph. The facts are that in order to prevent Veronica Butler from regaining custody and or certain supervised supervision with her children, the defendant and conspirators were willing to commit murder. Said murder was complex and involved extensive preparation. There are statements of the co-conspirators that their problem would be taken care of because, in addition to removing Veronica, they knew the path the judge walked to work. Now faced with the consequence of a sentence of death or life in prison, the defendant and conspirators would be willing to do anything since they have shown to be willing to commit capital murder in order to limit Veronica's visitation. Now, does this not sound almost like organized crime? This sounds like a mafia hit, not a grandmother and three ranchers that conspired to kill this. Basically, it was her daughter-in-law, even though it was they were just child in common, but it was basically her daughter-in-law. Wowsy pony. I still can't wrap my head around the stupidity of Granny. I'm baffled at this, too. I mean, the thing that really – I'm just baffled by the anvil. The whole anvil thing is just crazy to me. Alex Bird, very entitled. Yes, it's incredible. Rebecca Bulze, that would definitely cause death at a high speed. No doubt that they intended death. Let's get back. Interviews were conducted related to the disappearance. It was discovered that Butler was in a problematic custody battle with Tiffany Adams for the custody of Butler's two children. The father of those children was Wrangler Rickman, Adams' son. Butler's visitation with her children was court-ordered to be supervised every Saturday. Adams had a particular person she preferred to supervise those visitations, and that was Cheryl Bruhn. The court ordered Adams to pay for Bruhn to supervise visits if that was who she wanted to be present. Otherwise, Butler was to pay for the person to supervise. Adams said Bruhn was unavailable to supervise the visitation on March 30th, 2024, so Butler was required to arrange the supervision with one of her three approved individuals. Butler contacted Kelly of Yucatan and planned to have her supervise the visit. Butler told family members she was going to pick up her children from Adams at 1000 hours at Four Corners, intersection of Highway 95 and US 64 West, the location in Texas County, Oklahoma. You know, we spoke about this before, and in these custody battles, and when it's really not too friendly, let's put it this way, the people are at odds with each other. Shouldn't there be a safer place to do the exchange than an abandoned gas station? The answer is yes. And I had mentioned earlier on that in New York City, if it's really contentious, if one party is afraid of the other, if there's violence involved, they will do the exchange in front of the desk of the local precinct that they live in. That makes sense, right? Because not only is there built-in security with that, but the desk officer can make a command log entry for future court appearances by the couple to show who showed up on time, who didn't show up on time, the nature of the meeting, whether it went smoothly or not. And all of that can be used at future family court appearances. But to meet at an abandoned gas station, even though they Veronica Butler picked her escort, which was Jillian Kelly, and Cheryl Bruhn, we learned later on, was told by Tiffany Adams' grandma, oh, take a couple of weeks off. I'm not going to need you at these meetings, which also shows premeditation. She didn't want to kill Cheryl Bruhn, but she was perfectly willing to kill Jillian Kelly, which is so baffling. Really, she had nothing to do with this other than she was escorting her. Michelle Battersby, always in a public place for safety as well, obviously. Michelle, 100%. Alex Bird from the chat, grandma has too much power. Yes. Oklahoma Panhandle is in New York City. That area is no man's land, but they have a police department there. They could schedule the meeting in front of the desk at the police department, right? You don't have to, it just has to be a place that, a police facility, do the exchange right in front of the desk. Every police department has a desk that they document what's going on in the precinct. Or in the police facility. Rock Chalk True Crime, thanks tuning in to watch. Rock Chalk, good to see you. I like that name. I guess you're a true crime podcaster. I'll have to look you up. Michelle Battersby, she has no power now. Well, you're right. She doesn't have any power right now. Alex Bird from the chat, not somewhere where there are no cameras in no man's land. For sure, Alex, this was not a good spot to meet. So we all know that on the date that they met, Veronica was supposed to bring her child to a birthday party. But after they did not arrive, the family began looking for Butler. Melissa and Joey Padilla, who were Butler's family members, located Butler's abandoned vehicle just west of the intersection of Highway 95 and Road L. The Padillas then contacted law enforcement at 12:09 hours. An examination of the vehicle and areas surrounding the vehicle found evidence of a severe injury. Blood was found on the roadway and edge of the roadway. Butler's glasses were also found in the roadway south of the vehicle near a broken hammer. A pistol magazine was found inside Kelly's purse, but no pistol was found. It was known that Jillian Kelly carried a gun for her own protection. So we have to wonder, did she not perceive the danger, and were they able to disarm her, or did they get the jump on Veronica and Jillian? These are some of the questions we have that we don't yet have answers to. Someone's thanking Barbara Jean, bracelet lady from the chat. Thank you at Rock Chalk for the investigation on this case and going to that area. That's why I've heard that you were boots on the ground. Thank you for your work. Thank you for all you found out during this investigation. You know, I've praised law enforcement a great deal on this investigation. Part of the praise came from the fact that they kept their mouths shut. Their mouths shut, and that in the long run really helps the case. And I know it's frustrating for many of us to not be getting updated information. Look, the case, it's been nearly 3 weeks since these murders occurred. and we still do not, we do not have a cause of death, at least not published by the medical examiner or put in any of these police reports. All we know is that it was ruled a homicide. And then we have to guess, was it blunt trauma? Was it gunshot? We don't know yet. No one from law enforcement has come out and told us that. OSBI interviewed Brune. She was the escort chosen by Tiffany Adams' grandma. And she said she was available to supervise the visit that day, but Adams told her to take a couple of weeks off from visitation so Adams could question the children related to how Butler's approved visitation supervisors were. Butler and Kelly's phone records indicated their devices were actively sending signals to their carriers until approximately 0942 hours, after which the devices were no longer seen by the networks and stopped transmitting. Neither phone was found at the scene or within the vehicle, and they're currently missing. Adams was the last known person to communicate with Butler and was scheduled to meet Butler and Kelly for visitation at 1000 hours on March 30th. Through the child custody case, recordings were obtained where Rickman, who's, of course, Tiffany Adams' son and the baby's father, the two children's father with Veronica, he discussed death threats by Adams and Adams' boyfriend, Tad Cullum. The custody battle began in February of 2019 with many hearings and court appearances. On March 18th, 2024, and March 20th, 2024, motions were filed requesting extended visitation for Butler. A hearing was scheduled to occur on April 17th, 2024. Butler's attorney informed OSBI that Butler was likely to receive unsupervised visitation with her children at that hearing. At times, Adams refused to let Rickman have his children, even though Rickman had legal custody of them. Law enforcement previously responded to a call for service where Adams refused to give Rickman his children. Reportedly, the officer told Rickman he believed the children were better off in Adams' care. Rickman's grandmother, Debbie Knox Davis, reported that in mid to late February 2024, Rickman told her they didn't have to worry about the custody battle much longer because Adams had it under control. That Adams knew the path the judge walked to work, and we will take out Veronica at drop-off. Rickman was confirmed to be in rehabilitation facility in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, at the time of the disappearance. The children remain in the custody of Adams. Rickman denied having told Knox that information. So when you read this, it sounds like the mafia, right? They knew the path the judge walks. Also, they're going to kill the judge, and they're going to take out. That's the language they used. They're going to take out Veronica. Like, how crazy is all of this stuff? They're going to take her out. That means they're going to kill her, right? And they tried other times before. When they searched her computer, they saw that she made searches how to get someone out of their house. Things about how much pain stun guns will deliver. Just stuff that shows premeditation and shows Tiffany Adams' intentions with this. Just unbelievable. Yes, the YLZ pony, mafia matriarch. She thinks she's a wise guy, you know? She thinks she's Don Tiffany. Don Tiffany Adams. Don, you know. It's crazy. Phoebe from the chat. Yes, Rock Chalk, I know when they tracked the burners to the burial site. You know, we'll get to all of that, but a lot of this stuff that we're seeing now in the motion to deny, basically here it is, the motion to hold defendants without bail. Some of this stuff is redundant, but what's not redundant is that we're seeing the fact that she made statements to the police about what she did here. And to me, I want to read some more of this because it's so interesting and it's so damning evidence. On April 1st, 2024, OSBI agents obtained a search warrant for Adam's cellular phone. OSBI agents performed an extraction on the device. Information gained from the device included web searches for taser, pain level, gun shops, prepaid cellular phones, and how to get someone out of their house. I mean, come on. On April 3rd, 2024, OSBI interviewed complainant witness, age 16 years old. Complainant witness is the daughter of Cora Twombly and Kobe White. Now, Kobe White is her biological father. However, Cole Twombly could be considered her stepfather, right? Some people were twisting hairs about that the last time I reported it. Yes, her biological father is Kobe White, but she lives with Cole and Cora. Cora's married to Cole Twombly. Complainant witness stated she had overheard group conversations related to Butler not protecting her children from her brother, all in reference to an essay allegation. Complainant witness advised that she was told by Cora that Adams, Cullum, Cora, Cole, and Paul Grice. Remember Paul Grice? Paul Grice is potentially the fifth defendant. However, Paul Grice was brought in and the investigators released him. That either means they felt he was innocent or they didn't have probable cause against him. Can he be brought back in if they discover more evidence down the road? Absolutely. But you can't arrest someone unless you have probable cause. So in this instance, they may not have had probable cause, so they let Paul Grice go. But potentially, look, there could be other people involved in this case down the road also that we're not aware of, other people that may be involved. And remember I said to act in concert, all you have to do is do something to facilitate this crime. And if they can prove others did that, you know, we may find out that the son is involved. You know, we may find out that the son who is the baby's daddy, that he's involved in this, and this whole thing of him reporting, you know, Rickman is involved. We may find that out, that he was down with this. Or we may find out he had nothing to do with it. So anyway, let's get back to the potential of this five people involved. Through the OSBI investigation, it was learned that they called their group. Remember, they were a group of sort of a group that anti-government group called God's Misfits. Regular meetings were held at Twombly's in the home of Barrett and Lacey Cook. Those were the people that were taking care of the children. The complainant witness was told on March 29th, 2024, that Cora and Cole would not be home in the morning when she woke and were going to be on a mission. So they're on a mission. They're going to be on a mission. When the complainant witness awoke at approximately 1000 hours, Cora and Cole were not home but returned home later. Complainant witness knew that Cole and Cora took a blue and gray Chevrolet pickup owned by them and a blue flatbed pickup owned by Clint Twombly when they left and returned in the same vehicles. Complainant witness was told to clean the interior of the Chevrolet pickup. Complainant witness asked Cora what happened and was told that things did not go as planned, but that they would not have to worry about her butler again. Complainant witness asked about Kelly and why she had to die, and was told by Cora that she wasn't innocent either, as she had supported Butler. Complainant witness asked Cora if their bodies were put in a well, and Cora replied, something like that. Complainant witness also disclosed that other attempts to kill Butler occurred during February of 2024, near Yucatan, Kansas, in which Adams, Cullum, Cole, Cora, and Grice went to Yucatan. But Butler did not leave her residence. This is consistent with the web search discovered on Adams' phone about how to get someone out of their house. Complainant witness stated that Cora told her that the plan to kill Butler in Kansas was to get in front of her while she was driving and to throw an anvil through her vehicle windshield. The plan was designed to look like an accident, as anvils fall off work trucks regularly in the area. Wow. You know, it sounds so crazy that it has to be true, you know, because as we say frequently on this show, truth is almost always stranger than fiction, as we say. Folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, then you're in the right location. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring that bell, share us with your friends and your family, invite them to join the Police Off the Cuff family. If you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with three different levels. And we also have a YouTube channel membership with, count them, five different levels, and you can join the YouTube family, be part of the Police Off the Cuff family on YouTube. You know, the OSBI investigation showed that Adams purchased three prepaid, and this is all in the arrest affidavit also, three prepaid cellular phones from Walmart and Guymon on February 13th, 2024. The phones were identified by phone number 620-417-5752, 806-390-9141, and 806-390-9085. Search warrants for information related to location, services, and phone usage were completed for each device. It was learned that all three phones were at the area where Butler's car was located and last known location of Butler and Kelly at the time of disappearance. After the disappearance between 10:16 and 10:35, it was determined that phone numbers 620-417-5752 and 806-390-9085 were at a property owned by Jamie Beasley below the dam in the pasture near an area of freshly disturbed dirt. Concrete was moved from a location near Beasley's residence, approximately 150 to 200 yards to below the dam. Anyway, that's where they found the bodies, buried 10 feet under. And it enumerates in this document how they recovered the bodies. And what brought them to that location, of course, was the cell phones, the cell phone pings. You know, so many people said, oh, cell phones are not going to come into play in this case because it's so rural. They won't be able to get... they won't be able to get like pinging from cell towers and all that stuff. Wow. Look at the science of this. Look at what the FBI was able to do. Look at how the FBI, has done magnificent work in this case. Phoebe from the chat, Wildsy Pony Show. Phoebe, Rebecca Bullseye, you are correct. Debbie McCarthy. Phoebe says the burner phones pinged at the burial site. Absolutely. And when we talk about tremendous, tremendous evidence, that's unbelievable, right? That's unbelievable. Cheryl Carson, Wildsy Pony, it's unimaginable what kind of people do this. Yeah, we all are asking that. What kind of people could do this? And obviously, not good people. Not good people. But, you know, then... many people from this community are swearing that, oh, these are stand-up people. These are God-fearing people. These are this, these are that. They're excellent human beings. I'm not seeing it, you know. I don't think you guys watching this are seeing it. I want to go to Brian Enten, who was interviewed by Elizabeth Vargas. And Brian Enten has done a fantastic job reporting on this case and many other cases. As well, I believe the other reporter who was boots on the ground for was Sho Wu, who did a fantastic job. Apparently, this isn't the most friendly place to be hanging out.
That we've known that the moms were found in a rural area about 8.5 miles away from where the car was discovered. But this is the very first time that we are seeing video and images of when investigators showed up out at the location and started digging and searching for the moms. And if you look closely, it's grainy. We were able to obtain this video. It was taken from a ways away, so it's a little bit hard to see. But if you look closely, Elizabeth, you can see all of the police cars out there. The investigators are out there, and there is also equipment that they had on site that they were using at that location as they began digging for the bodies. Again, it's about 8.5 miles away from where the mom's car was discovered. We have learned through sources that the bodies were found 10 feet beneath the surface, that they had been covered with soil and they had to dig 10 feet down, located near a dam, and that hay in the area was used to then cover the soil so that no one would be able to notice that they were digging in that area. We have also learned that it was cell phone pings from the burner phones. Remember, the suspects had burner phones, that it was the cell phone pings that led them to that area. And that is why they focused in on that rural area, started digging there, and then 10 feet down discovered the bodies.
Right. I was just going to ask you what led them to that location. How ironic it was the burner phones that Tiffany Adams, the grandmother of the two children who's charged with murder, the burner phones that she herself purchased in the days leading up to the murders. We're also hearing that there may be a fifth suspect, a fifth person who is part of God's Misfits, who may be facing some sort of charges. Is that true?
So no charges at this point at all, Elizabeth, but this has been one of the big sort of mysteries that continues to remain and that people are questioning in the community, why this person hasn't been charged, who this person is. The name is Paul Grice. He is named in the affidavit. He was questioned by police. So he was taken in, he was questioned, he was released. It appears that he knew something about what happened, exactly what. We don't know, but he was released, and we've talked to people today, Elizabeth, who know him and his family and are saying, look, he's a good man, and they're waiting to hold judgment. If he hasn't been arrested at this point, they say everyone should sort of just back off right now because rumors are flying like crazy out here.
You know, folks, one of the reasons we're covering this also is because it has been reported that Grandma Tiffany Adams confessed. But has anyone seen the confession? No, but it indicates in this motion to hold defendants without bail that she in fact did make a videotaped confession. Well, it says statement. But there's many things that I would like to know about that videotaped statement, but yet we don't know it yet, do we? But we know that she's taking, well, I wouldn't say credit, blame. She's stepping up and say she's the one that killed Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. Does she think that that's going to get the other three conspirators off? Is that what she thinks? Does she think she's being a stand-up granny or something? That she, Alex Byrd, she confessed to that she's the one that killed. But that's the language being used in this motion to hold defendants without bail. It's just being said that she confessed. She made statements that she killed Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. It doesn't say how. And now we can, you know, we all know what happens when you assume, right? And many people have been saying that the victims were shot. Many people are saying that it was blunt trauma based on the fact that there was a hammer found on the scene. With blood all over the place. Obviously, this was a bloody scene that they knew immediately when they found the vehicles that there was foul play. So what's going on now? Why? This investigation is not over yet. It's not even close to being over. But people are like getting like, oh, I heard that already. Yeah, but this is what goes on in investigations. You look at things and you relook at things. You cross T's, you dot I's, you talk to more people. How many more people out there may know something? Many people were afraid of this whole crew of Tad Burt Cullum, Tiffany Michelle Adams, Cole Earl Twombly, and Cora Twombly. Many people were afraid of these people. Why were they afraid? Well, that's going to be part of this investigation. What are they going to find out as to why people feared them?
Yeah.
But he's not been arrested at this point, Elizabeth. So we'll just have to wait and see where that goes.
Brian, we've been hearing so much about the influence, the power, the sway that this family of Tiffany Adams had in this small community. I'm curious, in that town there, is there a lot of support? I know the victims' families are furious and were quite vocal about it and had to be restrained in court yesterday. But what about people who live in that area? Are they still afraid to speak out about these four murder suspects, or are people starting to loosen up now?
They're loosening up a little bit, but there's still a lot of, you know, intimidation. I mean, these suspects, some of them were very, very powerful. And if you look at that video again, the new exclusive video that we got, Elizabeth, the person who owns that land, his name is Jamie Beasley. And this is sort of a good example. Tad Cullum, one of the suspects, wealthy, has a lot of land. He leased some of the land from Jamie Beasley where the bodies were discovered, the video that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And the thought is, you know, perhaps he leased this land from someone who doesn't have as much money, decided to go out and bury the bodies there. They have similar looking trucks, which is interesting. Was he sort of trying to frame Jamie Beasley? Is that a possibility? But so you've got people like, you know, Jamie Beasley who are intimidated. I mean,
yeah.
This guy had a lot of money, came out, leased some of his land, and now police show up, start digging, as you can see in the video, and that's where they discovered the bodies.
All right. Brian Enten reporting live from Oklahoma on top of this story from the very start. Thanks so much.
So, you see now, this investigation, you know, people always think, oh, homicide investigation, you made the arrest, the investigation's all over. No. The investigation is not over. In a lot of ways, it's just begun, because they got to put this whole package together. They got to put all the evidence together. They had 2 weeks between the murders and when they found the bodies, maybe just under 2 weeks. So they knew a lot of things. They had a lot of evidence that they had collected. But they're not finished. Could it be that others are involved? We talk about God's misfits, you know. Is that group at all involved? It would seem to me that no. And we can never lose sight of the fact that this case is about these two women on the screen, Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly, who lost their lives senselessly over a custody battle. And someone in the chat asked, what was Jillian Kelly? I think Jillian Kelly really was paid by Veronica Butler to accompany her to the custody with the exchange of the children. She obviously wanted someone with her. Remember we mentioned Cheryl Brune, the one that was working for Tiffany Adams, and Tiffany probably knew, we're going to do the dirty deed this week, so let's get the person I chose as the custody chaperone, tell her to take a couple of weeks off, because I don't want to kill her, but I will kill Jillian Kelly. When you think of that, Jillian Kelly had nothing to do with this, you know? Nothing to do with it other than she was a preacher's wife. She was doing this maybe to make some money and to do something good for her. They knew each other. I think they were more acquaintances than friends. So Veronica knew Jillian Kelly from her church. And unlucky for Jillian Kelly that she chose to do this. Who could have known, right? Who could have known that these four people you see on the screen, Tiffany Michelle Adams, Tad Burt Cullum, Cole Earl Twombly, and Cora Twombly, were conspiring to murder Veronica Butler over a custody dispute? Who could imagine that, you know? Who could imagine that? There's Cole and his wife Cora, and it's Cora, her daughter, who is the witness against them. Cora's daughter is the complainant witness they speak about in the motion to hold defendants without bail document that I read, not in its entirety, but a great deal of it. So, sort of incredible, right? All of this is going on. that this lady here, and it just came out a couple of days ago, that court documents reveal that Tiffany Adams confessed to Kansas mom's murders. So was she proud of that she did it? Was she proud of that fact? Or did she think she was going to get others off by confessing to this? It's baffling to me what she thought. And then as you look into the backgrounds of Tad Burt Cullum and Tiffany Adams, I was baffled to hear that they have lots of money, or they own tons of land. Supposedly they're saying they're wealthy people. Is that why? Is that part of why they think they could get away with killing these innocent people? You're killing me, Smalls. Jillian is the one that is the saddest. I agree. You know, she had nothing to do with this. She lost her life over it. Optimistic Maya, I watched the perp walks outside the court again today. I noticed how heavy set, thick set Tad, Cole, and Cora's bodies are. Granny recruited them as the muscle while she orchestrated the whole thing. I don't doubt that. Teresa Wilson, what I so love about your channel, your input comes from 27 years of experience, wisdom, factual information. So many others speaks on conspiracy theories and adding to and taking away. Well, thank you, Teresa Wilson. I try not to get into the conspiracy stuff, and I try to talk about the evidence. Vicky Morgan, Julian was a court-appointed custody visit mediated that they killed a government employee. She probably had to be approved by the courts. Well, I don't have confirmation that that could very well be. Regardless, that doesn't make the penalty any more severe. They killed an innocent woman who was the mother of four children. Just absolutely horrific. Rock Chalk, true crime, got a phone call. We'll catch up watching comments. Rock Chalk, nice to meet you. I'll look you up. MR, Jillian was a CASA volunteer and proved by the court to be one that BB could use for supervision. Okay, great. She was trying to do something good, and things went horribly wrong. Nina Chandra, I just looked up that group, the occult, according to Google. A lot of this stuff in this case needs a lot more investigation. Noting that the area is so sparsely populated, this god's misfits may be very small. Just the Twombleys and a few of their closest friends, Cooks, Grice, Cullum, Adams. I think they came up with, they said there was about 100 members of this group. So there are other members involved in this. Laura Christine, this case just breaks my whole heart. Justice for Veronica and Jillian. 100% justice. We want to see justice. And look, we're on the way to get justice. Four people are under arrest. Annabelle Roma, I hope this case doesn't take years. May justice be swift and severe. Well, it's not going to be that swift. This case will take years, believe it or not. Alex Bird, disorganized crime. Geez, you know, most crime is disorganized. People give too much credit to criminals, you know. Debbie McCarthy, Sergeant Bill, who makes the decision about the DP and what do they look at to make that decision? I'm not 100% DP. Are you talking about declined prosecution or what? I'm not sure what you mean by the DP. But that'll be made by the district attorney, and in conjunction with the detectives and the investigators. But look, everyone in this case, based on what I've seen so far, is going to be charged with murder first degree. Everyone is eligible and potentially could get the death penalty. The only reason they would not do that is if they want to offer someone a plea deal to testify against the others. But no one's walking free, period. Someone could be offered a lesser sentence. And that's why the death penalty is a very good negotiating tool. I want to play this quickly and then.
And are, in fact, the bodies of those two missing mothers who vanished 2 weeks ago. ago.
A police have four suspects in custody, and Fox 21's Talia Cunningham is looking into claims of their affiliation with an anti-government group. Talia.
Well, Erica, these four suspects right here, they were all part of what's called God's Misfits. Authorities held a press conference today describing the group as a religious anti-government group. And court documents say on the regular, the Twombleys, they're pictured right here, a married couple, they hosted and even attended these weekly meetings. So there's no word tonight on if this affiliation had any connection to the crimes, but the day before the women disappeared, the Twombleys apparently told their 16-year-old daughter they were, quote, going on a mission, and the team reported that information to police. The speculated motive, a heated custody battle. Investigators say the killings were planned, and Tiffany Adams, pictured right here, that's the grandmother of Butler's two children, purchased burner cell phones and five stun guns before the crime happened. As far as the discovery of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly's bodies, court records show that Tad Cullen, pictured here, that's the grandmother's boyfriend, dug a hole in a pasture he leased out and then covered up with hay. The manner and cause of death is still pending tonight. However, a local judge who was friends with Cullen is now speaking out.
I'm blown away that this even happened. I just can't. Tad was a very good friend of mine. I'm not going to say was a very good friend of mine. He is a good friend of mine. But this just blew me away.
Yeah, small community blew everyone away. And you might be wondering tonight, where were Butler's children during this? Well, their father is in rehab, which is why the grandmother was taking care of them. But when the crimes were committed, authorities say that the grandmother left the children with a couple who also attended those God Misfit meetings. Authorities say the children are safe and were never hurt in any of these incidents. But these four suspects, they will be making their first court appearance tomorrow. And ironically, tomorrow, well, that is the same date when Butler and Adams were supposed to appear before a judge to discuss modifications to that custody agreement. And tonight, they're all sitting in a cell charged with murder and kidnapping.
Unbelievable, right? That judge just blows me away. Like, probably not, you know... And I'm not trying to be funny, but probably not good judgment to say that you're friends with someone that just got arrested for murder first degree, someone that just conspired to murder two people with three other people, and you're saying, "Oh, we're in business together. He's a great we are friends." Like, dude, what is wrong with your judgment? You shouldn't be a judge if you're going on national television and telling everyone how a man who just got arrested for murder first degree is a good friend of yours. Of course, as we now know, that judge was fired or asked to resign, whatever way you want to put it. But I'm baffled by that guy. Just absolutely baffled. Folks, if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube. I'm seeing a lot of new faces, new names in the chat. Go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, like us, share us with your friends. It's totally free to subscribe. So hit that subscribe button, join us. We're going to be continuing to cover this case as new information comes out. And today's whole dissertation here was the document motion to hold defendants without bail, which revealed some of the same information in the probable cause affidavit, but also new information that Tiffany Adams had in fact confessed to being the murderer of Veronica Butler and Jillian Kelly. So was she trying to take credit for it, or did she think that by confessing she was going to get others off the hook? Hard to know. We don't know in the motion to hold defendants without bail in that document. They didn't put the how. So as I've said a million times on different shows, we know the manner of death is homicide. We don't know the cause of death. Was it gunshot wound, blunt trauma? We don't know any of those things. So those are some of the questions that we would all like to know. And down the road, more and more information will be released by the police department, by the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. But for right now, we don't know. We don't know how the cause of death. Bella Obscura, he said he had never heard of the Misfits. Chinowin Slim, you do a great job. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. Carol Grayson, thank you so much for all you do. Carol Grayson is one of our moderators. Thank you. And she's such a loyal moderator. Oh, right from Scotland. She comes on and watches even at crazy hours of the day and night. Alex Bird, thanks, Sergeant Bill. Thank you for helping us read between the lines. I knew Granny off them. Yeah, how horrible, right? And Michidoro, if he never heard of the Misfits, he didn't know his buddy very well. Yeah, exactly, right? Casey Smith, Connie, me too. I knew it was the family of the dad. DB, it's ridiculous that the judge said he knew nothing about his friend's cult involvement. Of course he knew his friend's fringe worldview. Crazy. Debbie McCarthy from the chat, I really hope it was fast and he didn't suffer. I'm all with you, Debbie, absolutely. Bella Osborne, longtime subscriber here, usually on the replay crew, though. Bella Obscura, thank you so much. Alex Bird. Don Ron, wonder if he'll ever find out if Jillian used her gun. You know, we will learn that down the road. We do not know that now. Kathy Perez, thank you for all that you do. This is a very sad case, 100%. DG, have you seen the interview News Nation did with the founder of God's Misfits? He had never heard of this bunch and doesn't want any. I did watch some of it, but it was... I'm sort of thinking that the God's Misfits thing isn't really important to this case, that these people acted alone, that had nothing to do with God's Misfits. But Casey Smith, do we know any of the details of how they got them? Well, yeah, they got arrest warrants. They had evidence, and they just went. They built the case, a lot of it, on cell phone data, on digital data. The complainant witness, the 16-year-old daughter of Cora Twombly. Really powerful, powerful evidence. Sour Girl, a weird cult family. Alex Bird, thanks, Bill. I hope you have a great Saturday. It's just entitlement and narcissism gone nuts. I agree with you. Elizabeth McPherson, Sergeant Bill, good to catch you live at a decent time in England. This is daytime for me. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon. It's 1:27 actually right now. Casey Smith, so the son in rehab and the grandma off them so she wouldn't have to give the kids to the mom. That's apparently what this looks like. Absolutely. And but as I said, guys, as more information comes out, and, you know, sometimes people say, oh, there's no new. This is pretty new. This is pretty new that they have a document. There it said there was, but now the document's out. And you can pull up that document, the motion to hold defendants without bail. And it. A lot of the things that I read during this show are in that document. All right, folks, you know something? I want to just thank everyone for coming by today. This is Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. And this is a Saturday here in the U.S., and it's a beautiful day in Florida. So I'm going to go to the beach after I sign off the air. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Bill Cannon from Police Off the Cuff. Have a great day, and God bless everyone.
One episode, just ain't enough.